Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Each day, we see and hear more reports of human suffering and loss emerging from Ukraine. The stories trouble our sleep and the images turn our stomachs. And it can be just as difficult to turn away as it is to bear witness. And alongside the millions of people plunged into a season of death and displacement are animals. Wildlife killed and habitats destroyed by constant bombardment. Companion animals abandoned by those who have no other choice while fleeing for their lives. And in Kyiv, a zoo. A recent report in the Washington Post documents terrified animals traumatized by explosions and facing potential illness or starvation as food, medical resources, and staff dwindle. But why should we care? In the midst of so much human suffering, what difference does it make if animals suffer? John Kinder is Associate Professor of History at Oklahoma State University, where he's finishing a book on zoos during the Second World War.
The main thing to think about is that whenever you have urban warfare, zoos are going to be affected, right? Most zoos exist kind of in urban settings, in the middle of cities, often in Europe especially. And so when you have war come to the city, you know, zoos are going to be hurt, right? And I think the big thing for many listeners to recognize is that, you know, zoos operate on a knife's edge budget, even in normal times, right? If you go to the zoo, you know, many depend upon food donations, many depend upon volunteer workers, many depend upon cheap sources of energy just to stay open. And if you take any of those away, animals start dying, right? And it doesn't take long. And that's what happens during wartime, right? All of these things are the dangers of, you know, from starvation, cold weather, loss of personnel on top of the exploding shells, right? The danger just increases exponentially. And, you know, that's what we're seeing right now. And that has been the dominant pattern or the dominant history of zoos in the 20th century during wartime.
So zoos are going to have trouble. So bad things are going to happen in a war to a zoo. Of all the things and all of the living things and all of the even inanimate things, the buildings, the communities, the roads, of all the things that bad things are going to happen to, why in the world should I care if bad things happen to a zoo?
Well, you know, and I think this really goes back to kind of what zoos are and what zoos mean. For many people, zoos are the first place that they really have a sense of wild animals. It's the first place they come into contact with them. Zoos also benefit from the fact that they have charismatic animals, right? We're talking about lions and tigers and elephants, these the sort of animals that you make cartoons about that and that people connect to in whether, you know, emotionally, you know, or simply because zoo animals, as much as anything else, are viewed as innocent. Zoo animals did not ask to be there. They were, you know, many at one point, they or their ancestors were taken from their home, placed on display for our enjoyment, for our pleasure. Right. And so, you know, if we're looking at zoos during wartime and we're asking why they matter, well, they matter because we put them there. You know, we insisted that zoo animals be there in the first place. Right. So I think at some level, you know, caring about them now is simply taking responsibility for actions taken in the past.
We know kind of historically we've got this kind of broad sense of why it would matter. So what is happening in this moment in Kyiv?
According to reports, they are already running low on fresh food And we have to remember that if you take something like a pygmy hippo, right, it's going to require 90 pounds of fodder per day, right? So you have these animals that, you know, they need, you know, green salad, right? They need green food, right? So they're going to be running out there. A number of the animals are already being evacuated, and we've seen stories about animals being evacuated to sanctuaries in Poland, for example. But, you know, and that's a great thing. The only problem is, of course, is that evacuations are selective, right? Not every animal goes. And that's because, you know, zoos at their heart, and we don't really like to think about this, but there really is a hierarchy of which animals matter, right? Which are the animals that are going to bring people in? Which are the animals that are facing extinction? Which are the animals that, if push comes to shove, deserve more of our time, money, and sympathy, right? And that's what's happening in Ukraine as well. And of course, the other issue is that it is incredibly difficult to travel with animals, right? From car accidents to cold to disease to shock and fear. In my hometown of Tulsa, we had a giraffe that died in 2009 after suffering a broken neck in transit. Right, so just because these animals are being evacuated, and that's terrific, we have to think about, you know, that this is not something that will save the entire zoo. In terms of what's happening at the zoo, in terms of the animals, again, the reports show animals that are being, some are being killed by exploding shells and by shell fragments. This is especially in Kharkiv. We're going to have animals that are going to suffer because of the cold weather, right? And they're already struggling, I know, in Kyiv with a loss of personnel, you know, and, you know, zoos are living institutions. They require people. They require people to get the food to the animals and so forth. So if you take away any of that, right, animals are going to start dying. They're going to start getting sick. And they're going to start experiencing the traumas and the stress that go along with the actual war itself.
Are there clear guidelines from whatever sort of national or international sort of federation of zoos or zoological guidelines about how you make ethical choices regarding release or putting animals down when they're, I mean, in other words, do we let a zoo animal starve to death? Or if there is every expectation that there will be insufficient food, do you enter into a premature death that might be less painful?
You know, so at the very beginning of World War II, you know, the London Zoological Society preemptively killed all of its poisonous snakes and arachnids, right, spiders. And then it went on to kill a number of other animals. And this became a real debate that would carry on in the zoo world throughout, not only the war, but throughout the 20th century, right? Do you go ahead and preemptively destroy animals that might pose a threat? And some zoos did, right? Some zoos decided to kill off all of their lions and tigers, for example. But of course, you know, zoos, you know, the people who worked at zoos recognized that, you know, these animals did not pose any real danger to humans, right? The idea that poisonous snakes are somehow going to escape the London Zoo and endanger the people of Great Britain, you know, that's nonsense. And they knew that. But they felt like they had to do that because zoos are ultimately about people. They are about what we want, and no zoo animal, at least, you know, according to many outsiders, no zoo animal is worth the life of a human. Right? So it is better to go ahead and euthanize them at the very beginning. So you would have, that's what the London Zoo, other zoos, for example, in the Netherlands, you know, they were forced to kill all of their animals, right, at the very beginning of the German invasion. And then you have other animals, you know, being killed for to feed, you know, others, right? So you have less, quote unquote, less significant animals being killed to feed, you know, the more charismatic ones, right? And so this kind of develops over time. And the one thing we can say is that it ultimately it shows that there is a real hierarchy about which animals matter. And according to zoos, humans matter most.
How should we understand this question of resource allocation in a moment like this, where the people of Ukraine are having difficulty themselves getting across borders to safety?
In some ways, we're asking the wrong question, right? It's not a question of, you know, why should we allocate resources to help zoos or zoo animals and not humans? It's more a question of why shouldn't we allocate resources for them both? I mean, why do we sort of think it has to be one versus the other, humans versus non-humans? And I know that might sound kind of pie in the sky, but, you know, I can't help but wonder, you know, we have the resources to establish these zoos in the first place. We have the resources to take animals, move them all around the world, right? We have resources for all sorts of other things. You know, I worry that in times of war, in times of crisis, we adopt a mentality that essentially says that, you know, certain groups, certain life is more important than others. And I just think that's the wrong road to go down.
I promised we would come back around to this question of pets and of wildlife. Again, for me, just because of my own personal experience, the framework I'm sometimes using here is in fact the experience of Hurricane Katrina. And I can remember this sense of, you know, in media and in social media, like, you know, again, as you're pointing out, this notion of animals versus people, and sometimes not acknowledging that part of what was happening was that evacuation was not acknowledging that people and animals were connected in ways that were impacting human life. So your point about zoo workers staying, risking their lives to try to protect and feed and maintain the zoo despite the war. And I'm thinking of people who did not evacuate, did not leave in part because they were unwilling to leave their family pets who were profoundly meaningful to them as companion animals and as parts of their, you know, what felt to them like parts of their social network. As you're making this point about how do we do both, I guess talk to me a bit about even in like planning, right? So zoo planning or even in planning for human evacuation, how should we be thinking about or what are some ways for us to plan that account for the fact that we live in connected relationships with animals, both domestic and zoo?
I think this is touching on so many larger questions, right? You know, including how do zoos or how do all of us, how do we plan for a world that is getting so much more dangerous and so much more environmentally deadly? I know there's something that happens when in moments of crisis where we sort of think, well, now is not the time to think of the bigger issue, right? But the bigger issue is that there will be more and more people who become refugees, climate refugees, war refugees in the future. And we have to start thinking, and those people are not going to suddenly dissolve their decades-long relationship with the animals in their life, right? And so, you know, I think the first step is to just take those relationships seriously, right? And take those relationships as seriously as we would take relationships with other members of the family, right? If we don't start with that, we're not going to sort of get anywhere. But as for zoos, no, zoos are preparing right now for a world of a changing climate. They're preparing for how to survive. A number of zoos have been hit by floods, wildfires, and so, you know, so they recognize that these are real dangers. But I think for us, you know, it's, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of us don't even recognize or will admit that these dangers exist. So how do we plan for them if many of us don't even acknowledge them?
Should zoos exist?
I guess my short answer is no, or at least not in their current form. The zoo that many of us know, it's a remnant of a Victorian era, right? It's a place where humans do the looking, animals are looked at, right? We are in control, and nature is ordered and caged and displayed. But of course, that is exactly the kind of mentality that's led us to our current climate crisis. That sense that we can control, order, display nature, do whatever we want with nature as we see fit. And so I think at that level, zoos are fundamentally flawed. That said, you know, as I said, I've spent a lot of time at zoos, right? Zoo work is hard. You don't work at a zoo if you're trying to get rich, right? You know, I mentioned Ukrainian zoo workers right now, I'm sure, you know, are putting their lives at risk to save the animals of their care. So even if the zoo in its current form isn't a solution to the problems of animal welfare and animal extinction, I think something like a zoo, right, something that would allow us to forge those emotional connections is necessary for us to, as humans, to you know, address our looming, you know, kind of crisis with the world. I just don't think that necessarily involves, you know, putting elephants behind a concrete moat and, you know, in a little field of, or a little patch of dirt and having them spend 25 years there.
John Kinder is Associate Professor of History at Oklahoma State University. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.